Well, hello everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone who's joining us here with another Happy Hour with Dr. T special event series. Each week we get together with amazing guests and have conversations to inspire you and to help you grow, particularly in your walk with the Lord. Those interviews and conversations are posted on Tuesday at 11 a.m. at all the places that we broadcast. On Thursday nights of Happy Hour with Dr. T, we host a special event series for a deeper Bible study and different type of learning. Over the past 3 years, we've completed deep dive learning with Pastors Brad Cummings, Doug Van Dorn, and Mike Spaulding. And we've also done deep dives with authors Justin Prock, Doug Woodward, Derek Gilbert, and L.A. Marzulli. The feedback that we've gotten from these have been really, really great. People really enjoyed them. So we plan on continuing to do these special events on Thursdays throughout 2025. Tonight is part one of a four-part series that's going to be a little bit different than the studies that we've done in the past. I'm really, really looking forward to these conversations. We're going to take a deep exploration into the Bible when Jesus said, I'm not giving you anything except the sign. You just know the sign of Jonah. In fact, it's Luke 11:29, where we see the Lord give this admonition. Now that the crowds continue to throng around Jesus, he went on to say, the people living in this evil generation that crave a sign, but no sign will be given except the sign of Jonah. Now that was mentioned in three of the books of the gospel, so it must have been really, really important. But what is the sign of Jonah? We're going to go into that and take a really deep dive into that and some other things about biblical astronomy. And before I introduce you to today's author of this series and author of the book, The Signs of Jonah, we're going to take a quick break. This is going to be fascinating. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water, because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years.
Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Ender E. Law is a student of Bible prophecy and scholarly research. He holds degrees in engineering and an MBA. He has worked on more than three decades in the high-tech industry. His biblical studies include working towards a certificate in biblical studies, and he's been a small group leader and former worship leader at his church. Ender E. Law is the author of three books that we will discuss a bit in this series, and he's got a fourth one in progress. He has a very detailed and active Substack page, which is where we initially crossed paths and where I met him and had a couple of conversations with him. He's also spoken with Brad Cummings a couple of times, and we had a lot of lively conversation there. That's how we initially got acquainted. His Substack can be found at Ephesians 6:10.substack.com. Ender E. Law is a husband, father, a child of God. He writes under this pseudonym, Ender E. Law. Ender, thank you for sharing your time with us. Welcome to Happy Hour with Dr. T in this Bible study series. And I can hardly wait to dig in to hear the specifics about what you have to say in this book that you wrote, The Signs of Jonah. And if you guys haven't seen this book, and seeing the trailer on the book, if you go to Ephesians 6:10 at the top of the page, you can see it and get a little bit of a background after we finish today's lesson. So thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Dr. Tenpenny. It's an honor to be here.
How is biblical astronomy? I want to start with this just to set the groundwork so people know what we're talking about here. And where did you get your interest in the stars and biblical astronomy? And how is astronomy different than current day astrology? How do you see the differences?
Well, we'll touch on that question in the presentation, but I was actually questioning that myself, with astrology being something that we shy away from. And as I was looking at the Revelation 12 sign, which occurred, we'll show that to you. That's September 23rd, 2017. I started trying to debunk that, trying to ask questions on what did that really mean. And as I dug further, I started a small group. We studied Revelation 12, Revelation 13, the church, the seven churches, and came upon the term the Maseroth. So the Maseroth was spoken about in the book of Job, and it's about God creating the stars and God creating them for a purpose, to tell a story, the first gospel story, for instance. And it's not about horoscopes. That was corrupted. That's what happened over the ages. Horoscopes are more about me and my fate. The Maseroth is more about God's work. And he uses that as a palette to basically show signs. And I'd like to share that with you in the next four presentations.
Well, with that as a backdrop, to know that astrology is something that's been corrupted, and it was used as fortune tellers, and in the Old Testament, it talks about staying away from fortune tellers. But when you talk about the constellations and the heavens and how God created this whole story for us, it's really interesting. So why don't we just go ahead and jump into your presentation, so you can lay it out for us in a methodical way.
As you reference, this is about the signs of Jonah, and I really try to write this as an investigation. I'm an engineer by trade, so I was trying to write this from a scholarly perspective, doing the research, trying to debunk things, trying to ask questions, doing analytics around what is the Maseroth, what are the eclipses. It started off with the six seal signs and moved into the covenant signs. We'll be touching upon that in the subsequent presentations, but the signs of Jonah really revolve around the solar eclipses that we just experienced in North America. So we'll be going through what are signs, what are seasons in scripture. We'll be referencing Genesis, Psalm, Isaiah, and Job. We'll be looking at the constellations and defining some terms, conjunctions, alignments, and so on, and elaborate on astronomy versus astrology. And then we'll touch on the actual observations in the Gospels of the sign of Jonah, as well as the Great American Solar Eclipses of 2017, 2023, and 2024. So here's part one. Let's dive right into scripture first. And I'll start with Genesis. And Genesis 1, then God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the expanse," or the firmament of the heavens, "to give light on the earth." And it was so. So the lights in the expanse, or the visible dome that's above our head, include the stars, the comets, meteor showers, galaxies. And then in the subsequent verse, he calls out two great lights, the greater light being the sun that rules the day, and the lesser light that rules the night, which is the moon. And coincidentally, solar eclipses, lunar eclipses are created by these two great lights when they intersect. And you can read through that. I'm not going to read through the verses 17 through 18, but it all occurs on the fourth day. So who named the stars is the question I ask my small group. And Dr. Tempany, do you know who named the stars?
Mm-mm.
No. So
that's always been a curiosity to me, because even back in Job, which is, historically the oldest book in the Bible, it talks about Orion and Orion's belt. And so they all have names,
Exactly. And so the further you go back, the names are there. It says in Psalm that he counts the number of the stars. He gives names to all of them, right? So that sort of gives you chills. But he actually delegated to Adam to name the animals, but he felt it was important for himself to name the stars.
Wow.
And his understanding is infinite. So that's one reference to who named it, who named the stars. Then in Isaiah 40, 26, lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these stars, the one who leads forth their host by number. He calls them all by name.
Oh, this is
so, exactly. So that's the foundation to what we'll be talking about is the names of the stars actually relate to the constellation. They actually describe the constellations that the stars are within. And many, many authors and researchers back to the 18th century gathered that information in the book, let's see, I have it right here, hang on. God's Voice and the Stars, Zodiac Signs and Bible Truth by Ken Fleming. That's one book where they describe all the constellations and the star names. And then a more recent pastor who's passed away, D. James Kennedy, he wrote a book, The Real Meaning of the Zodiac. So they gathered the research that went into what are the Maseroth signs. So let's go and reference signs and seasons and what they are. So in the Faith Life Study Bible, and I cited the at the bottom all the authors that went into this, including Dr. Michael Heiser. You can see him there. He's also passed on, but he wrote the Unseen Realm and the Angels and Demons books. So they define signs as the celestial phenomena were often understood as divine signs in the ancient Near East. So this is the ancient worldview of what signs were. Not necessarily signs on earth, right? They were signs in the heavens. Then appointed times is another way of saying seasons. And it wasn't necessarily summer, fall, winter, spring. It really meant more the cycles or the religious festivals, right? So these lights that were created by God were for signs and seasons. So I'd like to pause for questions. Do you have any questions on the scripture before I move on to the Maseroth?
No, I think that's so far that lays the backdrop of, you know, what the star, that we're supposed to pay attention to the stars.
Yes.
It's another way that God communicates with us.
Exactly. And what you'll find in this research is that it follows the scripture. It calls out key words. And it provides a foundation for apologetics and eschatology. Apologetics meaning defending the faith, right? Defending that the Bible is true. Well, when you look in at the stars, that's one thing. We're just seeing the stars as at the current time, correct? Now, but in the modern day world, being an engineer, I downloaded software to model the stars, and you can any individual can do it now on a laptop or a MacBook. You can download Stellarium. That's one of the programs that I downloaded, and you can play the stars forward or play the stars back and see what the sky looked like from anywhere in the world. We didn't have that ability before,
and at any time, which is really cool too.
Exactly. And that's made it possible to look at these different signs.
That's really
so
cool.
To simplify it, you probably remember in Sunday school for Generation X baby boomers, the felt board analogy, right? In fact, I do vaguely remember a blue whale, a felt whale, and Jonah being hidden underneath it. And I think that's what inspired me to go to my parents and say, I'd like to get baptized, right? That story of repentance, that story of Jonah. And so the signs and seasons are placed on top of this felt board by God. That's his huge storyboard. And it's called the Maseroth. The Maseroth is just the Hebrew term for constellations.
Wow.
There's 12 major constellations. At the top, you can see Leo and Virgo. We're going to spend a lot of time on them. Libra over to the right, Scorpio, Sagittarius, Capricorn, Aquarius, Pisces, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and then Cancer. And just to make a note, Cancer looks like a crab today, but what it looks like is based upon the names of the stars, it was not a crab. It was actually a sheepfold or a manger. So that just opens your eyes up when you do see that constellation. Now, there are 12 major signs that I showed. There are then 36 deacons, or common term would be companion constellations. So total 48 constellations that tell this story. Now, over the ages, there's been other constellations added, but in the Book of Creation, the Jewish Book of Creation, the Jews actually believe God created these constellations as well. So the original 48. And like I said, some of them have been swapped out based upon Greek mythology or something like that. For instance, Cancer is one of them. Now let's look at, like you said earlier, Job. The oldest book of the Bible is Job. It's not Genesis. And in Job, God is challenging Job and says, "Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Can you lead forth the Maseroth in their season, or can you guide the bear?" In some translations, it's a Arcturus with its children. So right here in these two verses, you have Pleiades, and I remember high school earth science. My teacher described Orion, which is one of the most common recognized constellations. You follow the belt, which is the cord, and those are pointer stars that point to Taurus. And behind Taurus, which is like the V, is Pleiades, the cluster of seven stars. And through history, as I researched it, as far back as you can go, Pleiades is still there, Taurus is still there. Even the time of Abraham, which is when Job lived, but even possibly before the flood. And I think in the book of Enoch, it even states that the sons of God, when they came down, they actually brought the knowledge of how to interpret the signs in the stars. So it's gone all the way back to pre-flood days. And the term Maseroth is there. So Maseroth, again, like I said earlier, it's the Hebrew term for constellations. Now, the next, these two things I've circled here are Butes and Ursa Major, which is the Big Dipper. And they're high up in the sky here. Ursa Major is also the bear. So that's why some people think the bear in verse 32 is referring to Ursa Major. But some have interpreted it as Arcturus, and Arcturus is a star, the major star in Boötes. I hope I pronounced that right. But that's a man with a sickle, and next to him is a crown. And there's actually a reference to that character, I believe, in Revelation as well. I haven't written about it on my Substack, but that's one of the things I've started to correlate. Now, in the time of Jesus, there was a Greek geographer who refers to a group of Chaldeans that studied astronomy in Babylon. And this is where he actually references there were a group that spun off from those astronomers that were not approved by the others, and they professed to write horoscopes. So I believe this is when you see the corruption of divination or omenology, using the stars to determine a personal fate using horoscopes.
And that says on that on your slide there, it says 64 BCE. That
Yes.
would have been 64 years before Christ, if we.
Before Christ, yes.
So that's in itself fascinating about the study of astronomy, because they didn't have telescopes. They didn't, they were only able to see with their naked eye. Now, it was probably easier to see the sky at night because they didn't have as much ground light as what we have now with cities and all those sorts of things. But the whole study of astronomy, 2,000 years ago, with they didn't have the Hubble telescope and all those things then. And then they spun that off into astrology. That is fascinating.
Yes. Yeah, it looks like this is the time. Now, you remember in Babylon, Daniel was the chief prefect out there, and he most likely brought the prophecies of a star that would summon in the birth of a new king. So that was passed on generation after generation. Now, some of those sects that were studying astronomy then would spin off and corrupt it into horoscopes. But I believe the Magi were the original astronomers here. So to summarize, the Maserath is unlike horoscopes, not about my personal fate. It's not to be worshipped either. So a man ended up worshipping the creation versus the creator, which happens everywhere, right? We're worshipping Mother Earth, we're worshiping the animals. But here, people were worshiping the stars, and it states here in Logos Software Factbook that even some of the Israelites were tempted to go and worship the stars. And that's not what we want to do. We want to, this is our litmus test whenever we're looking at constellations. Maserath was created by God, and it's to showcase God's busyness, his work. He's omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, from the biblical creation to his second coming, Genesis to Revelation. It's not my fate, but the fate of mankind, for signs to fulfill prophecy.
Is there somewhere in the research that you've done that shows, I mean, if they were doing astronomy, almost 100 years before Jesus was born, who named these different zodiac signs, Libra, Virgo, Cancer, all the rest of the whole 12 of them? And when I see the patterns in the sky, when they show like what Libra is supposed to look like or what Leo, it's like, I mean, if somebody didn't put the lines on there, I would never be able to visualize that or see that. Is there, have you read somewhere? Are we going to talk, or maybe that's part of your presentation of how they came up with what each of their names were and how did they draw them, so to speak, in the sky?
Yeah, it's hard to tell, if we were to put ourselves in the time of Adam and Eve or Methuselah or whoever it was. They probably, like you said, did not have any distractions, right? They didn't have their devices. So they'd go out at night. It was much clearer. And I think night after night, it was more oral tradition to pass the stories down and say, hey, this is a woman, this is the seed of the woman, which is now Virgo, and this is the lion, and he will conquer, he will bring in a lion, he will be the Lion of Judah. So over time, people then probably said, okay, this shape is drawn like this, but I think the star names were there, and that was passed on over and over. And I did an analysis about the generations between Adam and Noah, and the subsequent generations really are just four generations because they lived much longer. The overlapping was there to pass down this information. I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, that it's hard to go back without the writings, right? We can go back to about Jesus's time. We can go back actually to, I did get information on the Bamboo Annals. I'll refer to that. That's Chinese documentation, and it refers to certain conjunctions. We'll showcase that in the upcoming slides. And you referred this to you earlier as well. They didn't have telescopes, so they were re relying on their naked eye, visible lights. And that's primarily five planets, the sun, the moon. And just imagine this, the red circle is called the ecliptic. That's the path of these primary lights. They They're predictable, they travel, they don't wander. So they're constantly traveling across the 12 zodiac signs. And they're like hands of a clock, but they travel at different rates, right? So the hour hand travels slower than the minute hand and the second hand, right? So the moon is going to travel very quickly, but Jupiter is going to travel much slower. And they reset. I believe that they reset every, it's like 26,000 years. It's called precession. So we're never going to see it reset, but God is omnipotent. He knows when things are going to occur, and he created this, right? So we're going to reference different examples of conjunctions, crownings, and parades or alignments. Crownings are called retrograde motion, and I'll describe that. The first one I referred to earlier is this conjunction. It happened 1953 BC. Now, you're probably wondering how in the world did you find this? Well, in my research, I came across a paper that was translated from the Chinese bamboo annals. These were bamboo strips with engravings on them that was found in a tomb, translated to English by Dr. Pankhaneer from Berkeley University. And in there, they were able to salvage these strips, and they found three dates. One of the dates was 1953 BC, and it was a spectacular conjunction. The Chinese thought it was a sign from Shangdi to approve of an emperor and the dynasty, the Xia dynasty. Well, I decided to look it up in a book written in Latin by Archbishop James Usher that documented the genealogy since creation using genealogy to measure out time, and it happened to align with Abraham. So this was just one sign. I found that, like I said, there's three. There's also Noah. I found another conjunction, and then creation using 4004 BC, and that led to this other book that I wrote, the second book, The Covenant Signs. And so this is almost, they're like anchor points, and they tell a full story. So as you can see, this conjunction is in Aquarius, and Aquarius, in the Christian perspective, is the water of life.
And what is a conjunction?
A conjunction is when at least two objects touch. So here we've got one, two, three, four, five getting very close together, five planets.
Okay.
And then an alignment is when they align. So right here we've got the moon, the star Spica, which is seed, sun, Mercury, Venus aligning. And a crowning is when Regulus and Jupiter is moving, and it starts circling and it crowns Regulus. So it does it three times. This happened on September 11th, 3 BC. And it is believed, multiple scholars believe this is what the Magi saw. And if you start unpacking it as I'm researching it, I did a 30-minute video on my Substack, four-part series. I combined it, and it builds a case that this was the birth of Jesus Christ. So,
September.
yeah. So
Wow.
So this would probably be why 9/11 is such a notorious day today. If they wanted to stop people from celebrating the birth of Christ, I think they succeeded. September 11th was also the right time for the shepherds to be out in the field. It was warmer, right? They were out there with it, watching their sheep. And the wise men later on came, and so I mapped that out as well. And I believe the wise men did visit December 24th. That's when they actually saw the star. I also build a case that through archaeology, they determined that the wise men were actually tracking the path of Jupiter. So Jupiter is in retrograde, crowning Regulus. Regulus is called the little king, and it's in the Leo, the line of Judah. Jesus is of the line of Judah from King David. So pretty fascinating.
It is fascinating because all of these things get have got lined up 2,000 years before that,
Exactly. He
which is,
knew.
really, really cool. I mean, I watched a video a couple years ago at Christmas time about the Christmas star and about
Yes.
how he did, this guy who did the video sort of did an analysis, sort of like you with mathematics and all this other stuff. And this was at the exact point at the exact time. And he's like, this is just, amazing because God, wiped open his hand and threw out the stars, and they all went in the exact correct place to all line up 2,000 years later to be the exact place where we now see that that happened. It's just the majesty of God is just written all over this.
Exactly. The next sign is the September 23rd, 2017 sign. This was gaining a lot of visibility around 2016, 2017. YouTuber Scotty Clark started making videos on this, and I was following that analysis. We didn't know what was going to happen, right? September 23rd, 2017 occurred, but now looking back at it, it was a significant milestone. It was a marker. And if you literally look at Revelation 12, it literally says, and a great sign appeared in heaven, right? Apostle John put that. Actually, he says it twice. A great sign appeared in heaven, and then another great sign appeared in heaven. And that's the dragon. A woman clothed with the sun. The sun is clothing her. The moon is at her feet. 12 stars above her head, that's three planets plus the nine stars of Leo. And she was pregnant and crying out in birth pains. And so Jupiter was in retrograde motion for 9 months and exits her womb on September 23rd, 2017. So that'll be relevant when I get to the fourth lecture and using that date for describing timelines. The second sign is about a dragon. And as I looked at this and you pan out, so you've got in the middle, you've got the virgin and then the lion, but there are multiple constellations that represent serpents and scorpions. And serpents and scorpions are mentioned multiple times in the Gospels. They're usually out in the desert, they're usually related to demons. And so we've got Hydra at the bottom, which is a crooked snake, also mentioned in Job. Scorpius, which is the heart of the scorpion, is Antares, represents war. It's the anti-Aries or Mars. Above that is serpents. It's being wrestled by Ophiuchus, which is Asclepius, the rod of Asclepius. You see that on many medical logos, including the World Health Organization, right? Above that is Hercules. It has three heads in the Hydra, and then Draco at the top of the screen. If you count up the number of heads, there's seven heads. And Revelation chapter 12, verse 3, it says, a great red dragon with seven heads, 10 horns on his head. A third of the stars are cast down to earth. I believe that has to do with meteor showers or meteor storms. And in my first book, the Six Seal Signs, I do talk about different intensities in meteor showers. So, I also circle there in the yellow. That is a comet, and on my Substack, I've been actually tracking the major comets last year and this year. They seem to wander through the constellations. They don't follow the ecliptic. They wander and they touch certain constellations that seem to tell a story. So, any questions there before I continue?
So keep going. I don't want to run out of time. Keep going.
Okay, great. All right. Whenever the sun and moon intersect, there's a solar eclipse and a lunar eclipse. And so we had three. August 21st, 2017 was a total solar eclipse. It was perfectly placed. You had a corona around it. October 14th, 2023, an annular solar eclipse with a ring of fire. That's where the moon is slightly smaller. And then another total solar eclipse last year in April 8th. Now, the first solar eclipse went coast to coast. And so I looked in the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia from an ancient perspective, what did it mean? And This was one of the most impressive signs of the sun and the moon, where lunar and solar eclipses. To God's people, it meant the power and authority of God, right? And it who forbade them to be alarmed at portents that distressed the heathen. So it would alarm non-believers, but to Christians, it was showcasing his power. And what is a portent? Do you know what a portent is? No. So I'm showing the second solar eclipse, and I've shown the definition here from the ISBE. And portent is basically a wonder, a solemn warning, a sign. And so again, we have a sign. 2023 came through. And then we have another one. In ancient Israelite life, the sun played an important role as a sign or omen. This most feared was a sign relating to the sun or the eclipse. And there's numerous passages that allude to eclipses or divine portents. So why did I start digging into this was, I don't know, did you hear about the Salems that were being crossed?
I'm not sure. I know about the Ninevehs. We t
The
I
Ninevehs, right? So the first solar eclipse was this one, and seven Salems were in the path of totality. Salem, Oregon, all the way to Salem, South Carolina. And people were like amazed by it. It went viral in the social media Christian realm. I then looked up Salem. It was believed to be the ancient name of Jerusalem. Then, when the other solar eclipse occurred, this last total solar eclipse occurred, I went in and looked up all the locations of Salems, and it went through another group of Salems, totaling 19 or 20 Salems. So I started scratching my head and started thinking, okay, is this just a coincidence? And so it calculated the probability, and that's in my first book. Well, it's very difficult to calculate the probability here because you know, somehow someone was inspired to name this town Salem, and then you have a total eclipse that crosses over it, right? So that was one layer. Then people noticed in social media that this third solar eclipse also crossed through four Joppas. Now Joppa is where, or Joppa was where the Jonah went to catch a ship to run away, and then he was thrown overboard, right? Jonah, Texas was also mentioned here. This then made me scratch my head because, okay, why Jonah and why Joppa? And then, like you said, there were the eight Ninevehs. And so I thought, okay, there was something called the sign of Jonah in the Gospels, right? So this triggered me to dig deeper into what was the sign of Jonah, which we'll look at the actual scripture in the next session. So I'll pause there, but there is one more thing. Do you have any questions about these locations?
No.
Okay. The next slide, and then I'll conclude with one more quote from the book, is that crosses, large, very large crosses were crossed by these eclipses. And there were two very large crosses that I'll feature in the next presentation. So I'd like to conclude with this quote, and it's basically, you know, what is the sign of Jonah? So to answer that, today this generation has the opportunity to look in the rearview mirror. This generation can research past signs and not just interpret the signs, but also mathematically calculate the probability of these signs. Prior generations would not have the privilege of witnessing these heavenly signs that have been unveiled to our modern day generation. We can now see these signs and ask the same question: what exactly was the sign of Jonah? So we haven't touched on the Maseroth yet in these signs. One of the things that I was thinking of analyzing further was using not just the line that it crosses through the United States, but looking up on where did that sign intersect with a constellation. And so the first one intersects with Leo, the second one intersects with Virgo, and the third one intersects with Pisces and Cetus. So we'll be unpacking those in the second presentation. And
So,
yeah,
did we
go ahead.
about like tracking all these eclipses? Now, you mentioned, all the things across the US, but what about other parts of the world? And did the solar eclipses mean anything to like ancient people?
Yes, I think, well, there are solar eclipses that occur in other parts of the world, and they did also mean like this. They were seen as an omen in some cases to ancient people, right? Like they either feared it or they saw it as an awesome sign. And I think not everyone was looking at them from a perspective of what constellation is it in. You would have to know the interpretation of these constellations, right? So different cultures may have looked at it differently, definitely. But from the ancient Jewish perspective, or possibly from the Babylonian perspective, who were taught by Daniel, I believe they understood what they meant.
So, do you think that what was the significance of, or do you think that it was just a coincidence that in the United States those eclipses passed over Salem and over Nineveh and over Jonah? I mean, what did they say? What is that expression? I'm going to butcher this, but it's something like when two things happened, it can be chance. When three things, it's coincidence. When it's four things, it's a probability. I mean, it actually does. And I know I butchered that completely, but the idea that there were that many cities that just fell on that particular line.
Yeah.
What do you think
Yeah.
about that?
In my next presentation, I believe I have three slides on the probability, and I'll just give you a sneak peek is that the odds of seeing a solar eclipse is about 1 out of 400. Now, let's just be conservative and let's just say it's 1 out of 100. So you have three independent events here. And so you're taking one over 100 times 1 over 100 times 1 over 100, which I believe, if I'm doing my mental math correct, it's 1 over 1 million. Right? So to have these three solar eclipses without the fact that they're crossing all those towns, without the fact that they're in these constellations, just three solar eclipses is already 1 over 1 million,
Wow.
mathematically impossible. And at that large a number, you add in the fact that it's in these three constellations, and then it's over those towns that you quickly reach astronomical probability.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think so. I remember in April when the full eclipse came, because I'm in Cleveland and we were one of the places that it passed over in totality. And I remember sitting outside, and when it got to the point where the moon was right in the center of the sun, it was so interesting. I mean, not only did, the light change, but it distinctly got cooler. Like it was like
Yes.
a lot cooler. Like I'm sitting, it's, kind of chilly out. It's April anyways, and I think I had on a sweater. But when that totalitarian of the eclipse happened, it felt like it was 5 to 7 degrees cooler, something like that, which I thought was, I wasn't expecting that. That was sort of out of the ordinary.
No, and in the second solar eclipse, this one that you're looking at, October 14th. I wasn't in path in the totality path, and I was outside tending my garden, and my chickens actually saw it go dim, and they went back to roost. They thought it was evening.
Wow.
They were all confused. So I was nowhere near the totality point. So I think you whether you're in the path of totality or you see the partial solar eclipse, it's still very, very powerful. And on over here in the third one, I actually traveled to a location to see path of totality, but it was cloudy. And we didn't see it, but we experienced it. Everywhere it went dark. I looked over at my family. I said, black as sackcloth, right? So we could see the light kind of come through the lower clouds, through the horizon. But all the motion sensor lights came on because it was dark enough.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, give us a little prelude of what we're going to learn about next week in our next session. What can people look forward to? And then I want to talk about a little bit about your other books for just a few minutes as we're closing out our day here today.
Sure. We're going to dig into these three constellations and these three solar eclipses. We'll also talk about the Synoptic Gospels, and do a parallel study of Matthew, Mark, and Luke regarding these verses and what were the Pharisees looking for when they were testing Jesus regarding a sign. I also wanted to dig a little further to what's happening this month in March. We're looking primarily at solar eclipses, but there are two very compelling blood moons that are occurring this year. One is occurring this month, March 13th and 14th. It will cast a blood shadow over North America and South America. And then in September 2025, another blood moon that occurs over all the other nation states. I wrote about this in my first book, and I'll just segue to the books. I noticed those blood moons when I wrote this in 2023, I believe, and it was about the solar eclipses, lunar eclipses in Revelation 6. It also talks about the meteor showers and seismic activity, as well as solar activity, which is related to northern lights, where the sky split like a scroll, and that's why I put this image on the cover. The covenant signs was regarding the bamboo annals, where those three conjunctions are, and then using James Usher's Annals of the World, found the conjunctions during creation and Noah's Ark, which tell a story arc. Next week, I'll show that story arc as well. And then how this four-part series is on the signs of Jonah.
Yeah. So where can we find your books and where can we tell people again about your Substack? Because your Substack is laid out really uniquely. I've never seen anything quite like it. It's got tons of videos and tons of different things on it. So talk a little bit about your Substack and then where we can find your books.
Sure. My books and Substack, because as I'm writing the Substack articles, and there's over 200 articles there, I started writing on world events, Revelation 12 and 13, trying to correlate those things, and then started writing on technology, transhumanism, AI, and the nanotechnology and all the things that are going on there. Then I transitioned to the Maseroth as I was unpacking that. So I've organized a tab at the top for these different categories, lining them up with Revelation 6, Revelation 12, Revelation 13. And that's found Ephesians 6:10.substack.com. Now, as these things are being researched, I then go back and pull them forward because it becomes clear things connect, right? Things are all related. So this book will refer to the previous books, and then I'll try to gel the information into a single book, all the Substack articles.
That's really, really cool. And you're writing on a fourth book right now, right?
Yes, the fourth book will be The Signs of Emmanuel. That was my daughter's idea, because I felt that I needed to unpack not just the birth of Christ, but also the crucifixion, the resurrection, and the ascension. And all of them seem to have signs in the Maseroth.
Wow, that's really, really interesting because we haven't really talked about the signs and the constellations, and the word Maseroth is was when you sent me the material was, and I started reading your book. I mean, that in itself was a word that I'd never heard of before. I mean, I'd read it, you know, I read it in Job, but you know, I never bothered to look it up, and I wouldn't know where to look it up actually, except maybe, you know, Uncle Google or something. But that it's to know that, you know, God's, you know, God has multiple ways to communicate with us. One obviously is through his word, but then through the signs in the heaven and through the stars. It's just not it's not just a random event. It's out there for him to be able to communicate with us, and that's just beautiful.
Thank you, Dr. Tenpenny.
So that's really cool. So I hope that you guys are really enjoying this as much as I am, and that you'll get this book, because this is, it's really well written, and it's easy to read, easy to understand. It has lots of diagrams and different things in it. And go to out to Ender's Substack and watch the trailer, which is one of the reasons why I definitely wanted to give the put this series together for you. So watch the trailer on the book. It's like 3 minutes or so long, and it's really well done. And so with that, Ender, I want to thank you so much for joining us here this morning. This will be also aired on hisglory.me tomorrow if you missed it or you want to go back and listen to it again. And it will also be listed on shoptenpenny.net underneath the membership tab, and it will be under on drtenpenny.com underneath the educational tab, where you can go back and listen to all of these different shows that we do like every day now. So with that, I want to thank you so much for being here with us this evening, or this morning. I have to get used to saying that, because we've been doing these in the evening for the last couple of years. So I have to get my mindset around the fact that it's now 11 o'clock in the morning. And I want to thank you so much for joining us. Thank everybody on our Tenpenny Prime team for being here. So with that, I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible. I close all my podcasts with, whether they are live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until the next time, remember to lean into God, trust him for everything. He will never let you down. Ender, we'll see you back here, same place, same time next week. We hope to see all the rest of you here back, same week, same time. And for the rest of this week and the weekend, to everybody else, good night and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com, and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.